Welcome to the second quarter financial year 2018 investor conference call for the NAOS listed investment companies. Your host is Sebastian Evans, Managing Director and Chief Investment Officer of NAOS Asset Management Limited. Go ahead, thanks Sebastian.
Right. Thanks Lisa, and good morning everyone, and welcome to our quarterly investor briefing for the second quarter of financial year 18. Just for a little bit of background, this is the first time we'll be doing one call, as opposed to we used to do a call for each of our lists, but now for the three, we've decided to put it all into the one. So it's a slightly different format, so please bear with me if I stumble my way through it. In saying that, the material for the presentation was released to the ASX. It was also emailed to our distribution list, so you should have it. If you want to be added to our distribution list, please email inquiries or go to our website and you can add yourself. So I'll refer straight to slide three of that presentation material. Some of this will be a little bit repetitive, but most of it should be quite fresh. But I do think that slide three is important, just as opposed to the backdrop of the market, and that really just touches on the NAOS investment beliefs. And I was reading a good, I'm sure a lot of people read it, there's a good letter by Howard Marks. He runs Oaktree recently, and there's an excellent quote in there saying that, you know, over the past sort of 1 to 3 or even 4 years, you really, value and fundamentals have very much fallen out in favour, and to be a successful fund manager, you followed momentum. I think that's been more and more been the case and more pronounced, especially over the past 3 months, albeit far the last couple of days. But I think, you know, what NAOS is all about is we're very much focused on value, we're very much focused on long-term investment horizons and the fundamentals of investments of our investments, with a focus on industrial. That is NAOS in a nutshell. And obviously, to supplement that, we then look at more, I suppose, more points such as we completely ignore the index, we focus on our conviction and the quality over quantity, and very much focus on the people that run these businesses. Because often, you know, you're investing alongside two or three people that ultimately, as with many businesses, are key to that business strategy, the execution of that strategy, and then how it's presented to the wider marketplace. Slide four, I suppose setting the scene of our three listed investment companies and why they are different from one another. And we do get this question from time to time. So obviously NCC is our oldest list. It'll be 5 years in February. So that really focuses on what we call micro cap/nano cap industrial companies, so anything between 10 and 250 million. NSC, the small cap opportunities company, focuses on businesses between 20 million up to 1 billion, so more of what we would call a small cap offering. Other people would probably call it micro cap. And then NAC, which has been around now for a bit over 3 years, really focuses on that small to mid cap space, industrial space, anything between generally 400 to a billion plus. But what they all have in common is they can all go to 100% cash, they're all focused on industrials, and they all run concentrated portfolios. So in that sense, they're very similar. It's really just split by the size of their respective investments. Slide five. I think, you know, just again, we always put some reasonable quotes in our presentations, but a great one there that you don't have to be brilliant, but only a little bit wiser than the other guys on average for a longer time. And I think, you know, once again, another great quote is, it's very hard for an investment manager to be rational for a long time, especially in a rational market. I think, you know, myself and my investment center face with that challenge every day. You know, people doubting your positions, your investment beliefs, and your thesis. But over time, if you can continue to outperform in little increments, the compounding effect really does have a very meaningful effect, and you can really outperform the market significantly if you stick to those beliefs and thesis, and very much have a long-term focus. But in short-term periods, such as probably the last 3 months, for example, it can be extremely challenging. Slide six looks at the performance of our three funds. So normally, people would see a full set of performance figures, so say 5 years for NCC. We decided just to focus on the last quarter because simply there was too much repetitive information. But if you do want to refer to our full performance figures, I suggest you refer to the respective month-end report. But starting with NCC, you can see the pre-tax NTA is $1.40. The share price was last $1.46. And over the last 3 months, we returned approximately 5% relative to the index which has done 13.69%, as you can see there. So obviously, underperforming the Small Ordinaries Accumulation Index, and as I know many of our investors have been in that flick for a very, very long time, it's probably not something that's unexpected. It's very much, it's been a growth market with a momentum focus, and I'll touch on that in some key examples. But pleasingly, the fund was able to increase on an absolute basis, albeit underperform on a relative basis. NSC, the NTA is $1.04, the share price is 93.5, and under its first month of stewardship under NAOS, it returned about 1.1% relative to the index of 3.2 for that specific month. Obviously, similar to NCC in the sense that it will invest in what we consider more defensive industrial businesses, but also, I suppose, working against NSC is the larger cash balance as we sort of transition the portfolio to a more sort of NAOS type portfolio. But pleasingly, I'll touch on the progress of that portfolio, and I'd say we're pleased with how it's evolving. NAC had a very strong 3 month period, which is very pleasing to see. Was up 12.59% for the 3 month period, but obviously it has an absolute benchmark there, which returned 1.06%. I'll touch on why that fund was up so much, but as some of our more long-term followers would understand, some of our key positions performed exceptionally well. Elders reported very strongly as their March year-end, which was an excellent result. And then obviously MyNetPhone, as some would have known, priced this month also, I think, recorded almost a record high, almost touching $7. But two of our long-term, large strategic positions, both delivering an exceptional set of, I suppose, share price performance over the past 3 months. Just touching on the dividend history for two of the three LICs. Obviously, this is old information, but as you can see there, the yield on NTC is roughly 4.8% fully franked, and then AC is about 4.74% fully franked. I will say, obviously, our results will be out, and we expect it to be late in the second last week of February, whereby each of all three LICs will be announcing a set of half-year results, as well as all three will be announcing their interim dividends for that period. And that's one of the questions I've got. So at the end of the Q&A session, I'll touch on this. The next three slides are probably some of the most important slides in what I like talking about, but it really just looks at key events, what we're looking for in each of the three funds. And as investors, these are probably the three slides I would be looking at. And so I'll touch on a fund by fund. But obviously NCC, as many people would know, the fund doesn't change a lot. Its positions have been relatively stagnant, albeit, the tail of the fund has really started to, I would say, take shape, mature, and some of those positions have started to increase, substantially, which is great to see. Without a doubt, the big event we're looking for, would be our largest position, which is COG. Was a huge headwind for our fund last year, our largest position. Probably, I'm not too sure what it was down, had a great year the year before, but probably down 35%. And when it's a large 15% position, it does provide a fairly significant headwind. In saying that though, and we've said this a lot to all of our investors, our understanding is that business has made a lot of progress from a business point of view, an operational point of view. And as is the case with many small businesses, the last thing to change is financial results. Financial results are a reflection of a business's operations and efficiencies. And we think and we believe that some of those will start to come through this year. And hopefully that will be shown in the share price. We think it's a big year. Obviously, from an operational point of view, a marketing point of view, I think a market understanding of what this business does and the opportunity, and then also a capital management point of view. So, they spoke of a dividend. They've obviously mentioned a buyback, although that was postponed until the end of the financial year. We think there's a lot of potential catalysts to convert that share price higher. We have a very large holding as well in BSA, as many will be aware. For many years now, BSA has been our best performer. But I've said this to many people, BSA, it really needs to be the year of the margin. They've shown that they can grow revenue. They've put a strong revenue target out this year. I think many people want to see a good underlying EBITDA margin. The ability to show that they can win business at profitable and profitable margins. So that's key for us. Another one, which is more of a newer position over the past 12 months, but a business that's actually been listed, I think, now for over 50 years, is Saunders. They're quasi-infrastructure, so they're probably half their business is infrastructure, half the business is in the manufacturing and building of storage tanks, for grain or even specific commodities. They've shown they had actually released their results, pre-results a couple of days ago, and pleasingly they've shown that revenue was up significantly, albeit the margin is lagging, similar to BSA in that sense. But it does show you, and in that sentence, I'll speak about infrastructure spending. I think people still underestimate the amount of infrastructure spending that's going on in this economy, especially in New South Wales. And I think when you overlay the pickup in commodities and seeing some of these miners starting to spend a little bit more, you know, we're even starting to see a shortage in skilled labour. You know, many over the past few years, that would be unheard of. So I think many people were out of the job, especially, you know, engineers and people like that. That is changing, and we think, you know, we still want to maintain a very solid exposure to that theme, and we do that through BSA and Saunders, and we think, you know, especially myself, over the next 18 months, these businesses can grow revenue very strongly, but I think they'll also be able to show that they can win business at higher margins, because it's hard to get quality operators to build these projects on time and on budget, so hopefully that will flow through to higher margins. Three businesses that, you know, one's a core position and two are probably more in our tail is obviously Big River, one of our newer positions over the past 12 months, but, you know, it's a business that's actually been around for almost 100 years, only listed 12 months ago, but they're looking to consolidate the building materials distribution space, and they've made a couple of, you know, I think three small acquisitions over the past 6 months, one in Canberra and a couple up in the Gold Coast in Queensland. We would, you know, I think we really want to see that business show that A, they can integrate these businesses, and B, they can get the synergies out of them. I think once that's the case, I think, you know, you want to see this business maybe have a go at a slightly larger opportunity. It's a hugely fragmented industry, lots of baby boomers that are looking to exit, and obviously they, for whatever reason, their kids don't want to own or operate a building materials or hardware business. So there's a huge opportunity for Big River, and run by an excellent management team in our view. One that probably no one knows about, or very few people know about, but we've been building a position in BTC, which is Biotech, I think it's changed its name, but I think it's Biotech Capital. They're in the business of basically scouring the world for, I suppose, drugs, proven devices actually, that are often being developed by large multinational businesses, but obviously Australia falls down the pecking order of a sustainable market or a quality market of size. So BTC want to go to these companies and license these devices with the ability to sell them in the Australian Pacific region and then obviously receive a royalty. So they remove all the risk of, you know, regulatory approvals, you know, and obviously trials and so on. It would be associated with many healthcare companies. They simply want to be able to sell and distribute proven devices. They announced that I think they've got with three devices, a couple in the dental space from a large Swedish medical device business. But we believe over the next 12 months you will see BTC start to build a really excellent pipeline of some really good proven devices that over time can actually, you know, contribute quite a significant amount of revenue. Some of these markets are very large and they do have needs for high quality devices that actually meet a need and reduce patient risk and so on. Another one is a business called Wingara, which I've got a question on, so I'll get to that at the end of the presentation. But Wingara is a business that focuses on oat and hay exporting, the export of oat and hay. For those who don't know what oat and hay is, I didn't know many years ago. It is simply hay that's used mainly for the use, actually dairy cows use it as part of their diet. Obviously, it's quite the nutrition and the fibre associated with oat and hay is key to the cow and the cow's productivity. Obviously, if you're in China or in Taiwan or South Korea, you probably don't have the land mass required. So obviously, A, keep the cows as well as keeping the hay alongside them. So they import a lot of this from the likes of Australia, but they import a substitute product from the US. We believe over time Woongarra will not only focus on hay, but they've said specifically in their presentation that they want to bring some of Australia's best commodities and what considered a high value commodity to the world. And it's not just China, we want to stress that. It is the likes of Taiwan, Hong Kong, South Korea, China, as I said, Japan's another big one. There is a huge market out there for quality Australian products, and I was emailed a photo by one of my colleagues here of some of the new Alibaba supermarkets, and I would highly recommend anyone to go and have a look. You look at the quality of the meat, the produce, you can scan with a barcode the piece of sirloin steak, it'll tell you where it's from in Australia, what part of meat it is, when it was packaged. It is a completely different shopping experience, but obviously they need to source a higher quality product, but they also need it in a reliable format. They don't want to chop and change with suppliers. There's a huge market for that. And we think Woongarra could, it does have the potential to be something very special. It's run by a proven management team who have a lot of skin in the game and know those Asian markets extremely well. And I think the final point, and I say this every year, but obviously we probably made one to two strategic positions last year, being one with Saunders, which is a big one, but then obviously Big River. I think we'd like to do the same again this year. Obviously our portfolio develops. Some businesses tend to re-rate very significantly. MyNetFund, for example, is no longer, in our view, it's an excellent business, but probably doesn't represent anywhere as good as value as what it did, probably 2 or 3 years ago. So portfolios evolve and opportunities arise. And so you'd like to see a healthy portfolio enter into one or two new strategic positions. Touching on NSC, obviously the new portfolio in the group. And I do get a lot of questions on this, on how it's going, how it's developing, what sort of returns can you promise, which I can't promise anything. And so there's just four key points here, and I want to touch on these. But point one, and I think, we want to add to, as a team, we want to add to some of the positions that we've recently entered into, so TOT, CGP, Japara, Service Stream. These are, in our view, probably more defensive businesses. They're all probably net cash businesses, or there or thereabouts, that operate with, probably some very significant tailwind, so they can offer a reasonable return for 8 to 15% per annum, but in our view with much lower capital risk compared to something that could offer something slightly higher. And that's purely a function of the market. And as I said, it's been a momentum market. It is hard to find stocks of, of size, so $200 million, that can do that we believe will deliver you 20% per annum over a 3-year view, which is our goal, without taking significant capital risk. I think you've seen that in the market. Everyone's taking more risk to deliver a slightly lower return. And I can guarantee you, even if we underperform for the next 4 months, I will not be taking a significant amount of risk to deliver a slightly higher return. And I think the portfolio is a function of that. And we will continue to be patient and be very selective in what we invest in. In the second point there, in saying that, we do have been able to find a couple of businesses that are more growth orientated, but with a value slant that we believe can deliver 20% per annum over the longer term without the risk associated with some of their peers. And I think one of those is Over the Wire. Obviously, we made an excellent investment in MyNetPhone. Over the Wire is somewhat of a similar business in the fact that they own their own voice network, just like M&S did when they started many, many years ago. Very much based on that niche that the big telco providers provide extremely poor customer service. You talk to a robot, you can't get anything done, you can't get anything fixed, and you pay through the nose for it. There is a good market for telcos such as Over the Wire that have their own infrastructure, their own support team that understand small business needs and can be competitive on price and still get a good margin. And we think Over the Wire will benefit from this migration away, a continued migration away from large telcos such as Telstra and Optus and Vodafone. Hello World's another interesting one. It was Hello World, the old former Harvey World Travel, I remember as a kid. What is interesting though is a large business was vended into Hello World a year ago, and that business was owned by a couple of husband and wife team, and they've been very successful in, I suppose, the travel agent space. For that, they actually took all scrip, so they're very much invested in the business. Qantas is a large shareholder, so they do a lot of Qantas deals. But I think when you compare it to the likes of Flight Centre, for example, and corporate travel, you know, they're still very much under-earned. They've got a net cash balance sheet, a fragmented market, but over time the market has the potential to be a duopoly. And obviously duopoly industries can be extremely profitable for those prospective businesses, so that's why we like Hello as well. Point three, and I know I mentioned this before, but as I said, we will not be rushed to deploy the 40% cash weighting. As I remember starting with NTC and NAC, you know, the first 6 to 12 months are crucial, and the most important thing is A, do not lose shareholders' capital, and then B, obviously, is seek to get returns over time. But we will be patient in what we invest in. We'll find undervalued investments run by excellent management teams, but we will be patient. And obviously, it takes time to build, you know, scalable positions that can deliver quality returns. But I will say, as we do enter into these positions, we will be public about it, and our investors will know what we're doing and why we're doing it, because we are transparent in why we're making our respective investment decisions. The fourth point, I think this is critical as well, is our investments and our performance is obviously leads into our ability to pay dividends, whether or not they're franked or fully franked or not, and what sort of rate they are. We've said that we want to build a sustainable growing dividend profile. So to do that, we need to perform, and we need to probably invest in some companies, obviously, that have, you know, growing dividend profiles themselves. So it's all about building a brand, building trust with our shareholders, and building a dividend profile that we believe can grow over the longer term. NAC had a very strong 3-month period, and you know, we're looking forward to the year ahead. So there's 4 points here, and what we really want is we sat down as an investment team and really discussed what we wanted to see in that portfolio, and we've kept it simple. But as with all our portfolios, our key strategic positions that often make up large chunks of our portfolio drive the performance of the fund. And pleasingly for NAC, as I said, Moelis, Minet Home, and Elders delivered a lot of that return last year. What we want to see is a few more of those strategic positions, even though the market, in our view, it's hard to find value. You can be selective and you need to be patient. And then obviously be opportunistic when pricing irregularities arise, in our view. So we want to see a couple of new strategic positions within that portfolio. The second point is, you know, we've been quite vocal about this. We want to see Moelis continue to use their substantial cash balance. And as I've said, they want to build out a funds management business that has an annuity type revenue profile. They've been active to date. I think, you know, the next calendar year ahead will be key for them in, you know, finding certain assets to build quality fund products. And they've said, you know, the spaces they want to do that are in childcare, aged care, and property. Obviously, property is a little bit harder because of where we are in the cycle, but I think those other two industries, there are certain opportunities, considering you can find the right assets and the right management teams in the right structure. The third point is, obviously, we did build up a fairly significant holding in Capital Health Group, which I know is in trading halt today. They've announced, I suppose, a takeover / merger of a large arrival called Integral Diagnostics. And that is a very, in my view, so it's a large acquisition for that business. And obviously, there's an associated risk with doing that, you know, especially when you're dealing with a people business in regards to radiologists. You know, doctors and medical professionals can be notoriously difficult to run in a listed company. So I think, you know, in saying that, if Capital Health can manage to secure this deal on friendly terms, I think, you know, the potential to grow revenue, to, I suppose, find synergies through, you know, better buying power and scale, for example, are significant. And it builds really a much larger player in that healthcare space. So the opportunity is also significant. So that's one we'll be watching very closely. Obviously, Capital is in trading off today, so it'll be intriguing to see and what comes from that, and then obviously what comes from any potential deal with IDR. And the fourth point is key, and it goes for all of the portfolios. I think, as I said, you know, you can have a portfolio that's 60% invested or 100% invested. For me, it's not a great reflection of the risk of a portfolio. I think you really need to understand the individual investments. You can have a 10% position in something that's half, has a very strong net cash balance sheet, or you can have a 10% position in something that's a financial technology business that's got enough cash for the next 6 months. What we will do, though, is, you know, we will maintain a concentrated portfolio with enough liquidity and therefore flexibility to protect our investors' capital, whether or not this is by holding cash or this is by our investment holding cash, and then being able to obviously use that opportunistically in times of pricing irregularities, such as, you know, a sharp drop or profit downgrade or whatever it may be, or a company requiring cash for a potential acquisition. That's what we do, and I'd say that's what we do best. You do need to be patient, but then when the opportunity comes around, you can't afford to invest 1% or 2%. You need to know what you're doing. You need to have a solid understanding of that business over the past 2 or 3 years, and then you can allocate potentially 10% or 15% of your capital to make it a meaningful weight, then obviously deliver performance for our shareholders. Slide 11. Just another good quote there. No one really knows what events are going to transpire, and then secondly, no one knows what the market's reaction to those will be. I think, you know, 4 years ago when quantitative easing started, no one would have told you, or very few people would have told you, the market's reaction would be hope that would be a four-year bull market. So slide 12, and I think market outlook, and this is just more observations as opposed to me trying to tell people what I think the market's going to do. You know, I think the first point there is, you know, stock-specific valuations of specifically growth companies are high. They're especially high when you overlay the potential for earnings fluctuation. You know, many of these growth companies, you can see analysts out there saying, you know, use an example that everyone would know. And you look at something like an Afterpay, they say it should be worth $9.50 based on our discounted cash flow analysis. You know, I think the point remains, anyone could create a discounted cash flow analysis that gives me a price target that I need. They're very easy to manipulate. But what's very hard to do is to find the inputs that are actually representation of what is going to happen and what the future looks like. It only takes a very small change in a variable to change that target price and valuation from $9.50 to $2. Or even for that matter to $20. But I think a lot of people investing in growth businesses lately have been using these sort of valuation metrics with very probably little understanding of the potential for those inputs to be something extremely different. And I think when you overlay, you know, the potential for change, obviously people are investing in businesses that are changing industry, you know, what's to stop a new competitor coming out with a new technology that supersedes the old technology and takes market share. Markets are moving faster and faster every day, and change is happening all around it. I think it will affect valuations for some growth companies over the longer term. Number two, and we say this all the time, you know, the ability for companies to have their strong own balance sheets and not rely on equity market capital, and for that matter, debt markets. Yes, you know, I suppose markets have been filled with cash over the past 2 to 3 years, but as you can see in the past 2 days, with bond yields rallying sharply, it doesn't take much for markets to come to a halt, and then for companies who are seeking to raise equity for whatever reason, not be able to. And I think if they don't have their own balance sheet to fall back on and reinvest themselves, the party can come to a pretty significant stop very quickly. So all of our businesses tend to, or always have, probably in my view, the ability to reinvest and have cash for a rainy day. More importantly, as opposed to reinvesting, acquire businesses that probably may fall on hard times but may operate in good industries, you know, just the advent, the opportunistic to acquire businesses that have probably got themselves into the wrong situation. And then point three, I think, and this is what we're doing, I think it's been a big talking point for a long time, but focusing on long-term thematics. As I said, it's hard to pick input variables or financials over the longer term, but what you can do is try and reduce that risk through managing, you know, investing alongside a thematic that's going the right way. So know, people ask about our position in Japara. Well, I'll talk about the aged care thematic, for example, a huge thematic that's not going away anytime soon. We talk about infrastructure, another thematic that, you know, in our view, has got another 2 or 3 years to run when you look at the amount of projects around. There are some excellent long-term thematics, and I think when you invest with the wind behind your back, you take somewhat an amount of risk out off the table when you're trying to do the financial analysis yourself and try and predict the future and potential valuations, and that's what we try to do here. Just some examples on slide 13 to give people some idea of where we're at and what I suppose we've been dealing with over the past year. Just giving you three stocks there that have been the highest returners in what we would call our universe. One that's been very topical lately is a business called GetSwift, which is up 949% in the past year. They provide delivery software for the likes of Domino's, you know, trying to reduce delivery times, for example. Unfortunately for them, they've been in a stock suspension for the past week or so because they've had some disclosure issues on losing customer contracts and not announcing them to the market. But at the same time, prior to a week ago, they were a market darling. I think that's some of the risks you take when you invest in some of these businesses that, in effect, they've probably been around for 18 months and they've been listed for a lot less. And they have very little public market experience and some of the risks associated with that. I think some of the hype and then the pressure to keep getting that share price higher and higher becomes, you know, almost too much to bear for some management teams, and you're almost forced into the fact. Linear Group, which is up 240%, I'm not going to lie, I actually don't even know what it does. And then Temple & Webster is a furniture business that operates mainly on through the web. And yes, it's up 240%, but I think if you go back, you know, 3 years ago, it was one of the worst performing IPOs that, you know, sort of went from circa 70 or 80 cents almost down to 10 cents. For some of these businesses, yes, they've had excellent one-year returns, but how sustainable their business model is debatable. Some of the businesses that we've invested in, and what we're trying to say here is you can find businesses that return, you know, good returns in what has been a strong market. And one of the ones we've been proud of, obviously, is Elders. You know, a business that arguably people thought would go broke many, many times over. It's actually returned 115% and has an excellent balance sheet now and is in a much healthier position. Australian Ethical, they're a funds management and a superannuation business, focusing on ethical investments. It's been, you know, that's one of the few stocks that's got a share price over $100. I think they're about $145 today. It's been an outstanding performer due to, you know, some very sharp inflows for their business. Smart Group, a business, unfortunately, we probably sold a little bit early, but they're focusing in the novated leasing space, salary packaging space, run by an exceptional management team. And then CNL Group, which was one of our investments in NCC, focusing on that receivables, factoring space, financing space for small to medium businesses that, you know, especially in the infrastructure boom that we're in, that have to deal with getting their receivables in on 180 days but still being able to fund their business growth. Which is a hard thing to do. Slide 14, just to finish off, and I probably won't, I'll go through each point, but point one is, everyone would know this, but obviously knows this well, we take a 3-year view all the time. You tend not to focus on market noise, we're obviously happy to talk about it, but our view is on returns over a 3-year view and the risk we're taking to try and achieve that 20% return. And when you look at some of the variables that we consider, you look at technological competitive advantages, reliance on equity markets for funding, and then obviously companies that aren't market aware or market facing. And you all overlay that with revenue variability, management teams that are obviously aligned through equity. And the universe that you can invest in becomes smaller and smaller each day, unfortunately. Second point there is finding companies that are run by proven management teams with proven track records. It is not an easy thing to do, let me tell you. With more and more businesses obviously listening each day, it is hard to find people who are proven, conservative, and can deliver a set of numbers that grows slightly, that is consistent. They're very hard to find. So when you find them, you try to hang on to them for as long as you can and as long as they represent value. And I think, you know, the point there is a lot of people ask me this, but a lot of these businesses have a lot of the hallmarks of very successful privately run family businesses. they tend to keep to themselves, they focus on some simple tasks, they do it well, they're very much customer focused as opposed to being shareholder focused, if you get what I mean, share price focused. And they build very much long-term sustainable businesses that do become very valuable. And then the third point is the quality and the sustainability of a company's earnings base. What saves your share price is the ability for a business to maintain revenue and maintain earnings and not for that to fall in a hole for whatever reason. Then obviously their ability to meet their customers' demand. At the end of the day, a business is around because they meet a customer's demand. If that falls over, if they can't meet their demand, if their service falls off, if they have issues in any way with their customer relationships, then that kills the business. So a lot of the time we spend talking to customers, understanding are their needs being met, and how are they going about their business. On slide, it's that time of the year, or second time of the year, where it's our NAOS Roadshow for March 2018. So we've put in a save the date there, so we'll be presenting in six different cities. We've given you the times and the dates. So if you do want to RSVP, I'm not too sure if you can RSVP yet on the website, but I believe you can, so please refer to our website and please RSVP. And you can see the respective the days and the locations of those events. It's worthwhile saying that we will be going through each list at those days, so we're not going to do a separate one. We'll try and make it short, sweet, and then hold a Q&A session straight afterwards. And then slide 17, just the 10 different ways you can keep in touch, which I'm sure you're all aware, but please feel free to add yourself to our CEO Insights or go to our website or just email us or call us, as many of you do. And then finally, unfortunately, our team's expanded again. Scott Hildebrand will be starting work with us tomorrow, and he will be our distribution and sales manager. So as I've said, and as people would have known, this chart's gotten a lot bigger over the past 5 years. We continue to invest in our team that hopefully continues to lead to, obviously, better communication and more transparent communication with our shareholders. But in saying that, if you do have any feedback on how we can improve, we always want to improve, please don't hesitate to email me personally. Or any member of the team. If not, I look forward to seeing you at the NAOS half yearly roadshow to go through our strategy and update you on the performance. So thanks for obviously joining the call under this new format. If you do have any suggestions, please let us know. And apologies for the call quality if it wasn't great. Otherwise, enjoy the cooler weather, and we'll see you in March. Thanks.